Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with Antonio Brown in his attempt to become the Floyd Mayweather of football. Antonio Brown is making a huge mistake. He's picking a fight he can't win. Money Brown versus Big Ben is not the same as the Money Team versus Pac-Man. Ben Roethlisberger isn't in his prime, but he's far more formidable an opponent than 35-year-old Manny Pacquiao was in 2015. AB needs to call off his feud with Roethlisberger. Big Ben doesn't want this fight. He's already won. Pittsburgh kicked Brown out of town, banished him to the Raiders. Game over. Earlier this week, Roethlisberger acknowledged he made a mistake publicly criticizing Brown, saying it ruined a friendship. Brown responded yesterday via Twitter, telling Roethlisberger to shut up and claiming that they were never friends. Brown further elaborated that in order to rise as an NFL star, he faked a friendship with Ben. He tweeted, "You see, when you're a young wide receiver in this league and you're a late round pick or even undrafted, you pretty much got to do whatever to make it or even get a look. Hashtag mentality, hashtag hungry." I'm starting to wonder if AB has any friends. A friend would snatch AB's smartphones and laptops from him and tell him, "This ain't the look you want, bruh.
Nah, dog.
This is looking like Brokeheart Mountain." I actually never saw that movie. Let me stick to what I know. An Officer and a Gentleman. Dang. It's probably my favorite movie about love and heartbreak. Y'all ever see that?
Yeah.
Two dudes played by Richard Gere and David Keith are going through aviation officer candidate school. Richard Gere is Big Ben. David Keith is Antonio Brown. They're being trained by toughest nails gunnery sergeant played by Lou Gossett Jr. That's Mike Tomlin. "Only two things come out of Pittsburgh: Steelers and Squealers. Which one are you, boy? I don't see no Super Bowl rings." David Keith's character gets hoodwinked into quitting officer candidate school by a conniving woman. He ends up committing suicide. That's what's happening to AB. He committed career suicide by forcing a trade to the Raiders. Meanwhile, Richard Gere graduates school, falls in love, and ends the movie walking into a factory full in a full officer's uniform and carrying off Deborah Winger in his arms. That's Big Ben walking into the Steelers locker room and picking up Juju Smith-Schuster. AB is so jealous. He remembers when Big Ben looked at him the way he looks, the way he now does look at Juju and James Washington. AB is a 31-year-old divorcee who is having to settle for Derek Carr. He knows Ben is winning the divorce. Brown is worried his numbers are going to fall dramatically and that Ben's won't. Brown wants to be as polarizing and as famous as Floyd Mayweather. Problem for Brown is Floyd never lost a fight, and Brown is getting his brains beat in on all scorecards by Big Ben. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts T.J. Houshmandzadeh and LeVar Arrington. Marcellus, let's go to the scorecard.
Ding, 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 ding.
Who's going to win this divorce?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Over the long haul, Big Ben or AB?
Boy,
One, I'm coming over to your house and I'm paying for some pay-per-views because this boxing analogy is flawed. Let's talk about this. One, Pac-Man at 35 was no slouch. This is 8-time world champion. Give him some credit.
He's 40 and he still ain't a slouch.
He's still tilting on their head. Put some respect on my name. Second of all, this is not a boxing analogy. They both need help. In boxing, it's mano-a-mano. It's Whitlock versus Wiley. In this situation, it's Ben. Ooh, Juju, I need you. Come on in here. Help me out, man. Catch these balls.
Corner man.
A corner man. Yeah, but he ain't throwing punches. Juju got to throw some punches for Roethlisberger. AB needs Derek Carr. You know, we need each other. So I'm looking at this situation to answer the question, who's going to win the divorce? Big Ben. By position. By the fact that you don't need athleticism for longevity. By the fact that he's going to be able to walk into Canton with less resistance than what AB is going to face. This whole new TO angle and making you wait for the third round of your Hall of Fame candidacy is going to be an issue. Third ballot, TO. And if AB becomes a top five receiver, he won't even stay in Oakland for long or Las Vegas. He will bounce around this league. You know why? Here's a couple of names of the top three receivers, top four receivers, maybe in all-time history. Randy Moss played for 5 teams. We're talking about the Vikings and Patriots we know him for. Y'all remember the Titans and 49ers? Raiders, everybody? No? Okay, Jerry Rice, 3 teams. Seahawks. Remember Jerry Rice?
I don't remember that. But
yeah.
I do.
T.O. T.O. with your Bengals. Oh, the Bills. I mean, look. Chris Carter, Vikings, Dolphins, Eagles. Like, the thing is, if AB is AB, it ain't going to end as a Raider. So that's going to hurt him as well walking into Canton. This whole perception of who's going to win his divorce is going to come down to the longevity and then the post-career. And I think that Roethlisberger wins that.
When I look at it, I think Antonio Brown is becoming more of a sympathetic figure. And the way we look at things these days is...
What did you just say?
Believe you me, there is enough criticism. See, this is how things work. When it's a high-performing athlete that's out there, the media has a way of really, really piling on, whether it's deserved or not, they pile on those types of guys. And it turns into so much coverage and so much of an adversarial type of approach on that figure that he becomes sympathetic. Mm. And what's interesting here is Ben is trying to get the spotlight off of him so that he can become a sympathetic figure, but he's doing it self-proclaimed. Oh, you're my friend. Well, there's a lot of people out there that's sitting there looking at it like, man, AB just said, you wasn't my friend. I did what I had to do, try to survive. There's going to be more people out there that are paying attention that can relate to AB's approach more so than Big Ben's. And I'm telling you right now, it's not about, I agree with the boxing analogy. This isn't a head up, one-on-one thing. No. Floyd is able to sell boxing matches by becoming a villain. What AB is doing is basically saying, I'm going to do me, I'm going to be me, and I'm going to be how I am. And in the end, you play with a guy like this. In the end, whether you accept me or you don't accept me, I'm going to continue to be who I am. As long as AB performs and continues to be true to who he is, the people that dislike him will dislike him. But at the end of the day, he has gotten so much scrutiny that he becomes a sympathetic figure. If he performs well, you watch what I tell you. People going to come back around and be like, AB always could play. I mean, I don't like him as a person. Yeah. Hey, I don't think he's a cool dude, but he could always play.
The only flaw in that argument is if he performs well. And he needs somebody else to help him perform well. And Derek Carr is not Ben Roethlisberger. Mm. So it's like, who wins the divorce? Short term or long term?
Long term. Divorce when it's final.
It's 100% going to be Ben Roethlisberger. It's no question because of, one, he's in a more stable organization. He is a quarterback. He can play longer. And he can really dictate his success. Ben Roethlisberger's played well with Santonio Holmes. He played well with Mike Wallace. He played well with Antonio Brown. He's going to play well with Juju and James. That's the Steelers. They have that stability to where they have. Yeah. AB, statistically, is not going to have the type of season he had with Derek Carr. Derek Carr is not.
He didn't need to, is my position.
But you, from his tweet, it's evident. Him and Ben Roethlisberger just didn't get along, period. Right, right. They got along
for
the sake of the
team. Remember in 2014, he tweeted that Ben was his best friend on the team.
That's why he deleted the tweet yesterday, because he went out there. And then, you know, these receipts are on the internet.
Yeah.
And they came back, and he had to delete that one because it just looked too...
Hey, he was... What'd he say? I was trying to get my ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We explained that.
I just... And I don't know which... It's like Ben is doing a rope-a-dope on AB.
Yeah.
And because to me, AB could have won this fight. Big Ben's reputation is not great. Particularly, you go back when he really had the off-the-field issues or whatever. Mm-hmm. So if AB had fought a different fight, don't go out. You got your money. You went off to Oakland. Leave Big Ben alone. Don't engage. I think he had a chance if he went out there and just, all he had 1,200 yards, 10 TDs in Oakland.
How many catches?
Who knows? But just put up nice numbers, and then people would have argued, man, Ben ruined it. He could have had AB and Juju. This could have been the difference. But by engaging and by not, because again, some of what Ben is doing is passive aggressive. When you say in one voice, I regret criticizing AB, and then in the next voice you say, but look how James Washington handled it.
Yeah.
That's a shot
at AB. That you're okay with the criticism that I, right.
That's a shot at AB. AB needs to leave this alone.
Well, AB's biggest flaw is not the fact that he's talking about Ben Roethlisberger, is that he's not calculated in his responses. Ben, rope-a-dope, passive-aggressive, is calculated. He's pulling vet moves on AB, who looks emotional. So when you look emotional, you look erratic. So people don't know how to follow you, so therefore they just lose you. And they say, just go home. This guy is out of his mind. Instead of respecting everything he's saying, he should have played it. Look, Kobe Bryant did the same thing. This whole Black Mamba came from, okay, I got some issues in the past. Let me wash my hands clean, accept this villain role, and then run with it. And everyone kind of gives you the Kobe treatment, which is love. You have some indiscretions, but it's all love. Roethlisberger is doing the same thing. Like, look, man, I'm going to embrace who you guys think I am, and I'm regretful for
but
the things
I still think that comes back to relatability. People can relate to Kobe Bryant.
Kobe dating Brandy McDonald's commercial. Dudes was complaining that the dude wouldn't even hang with him.
That's fair.
Nah,
but
Kobe ain't relatable.
I think there was relatable moments to Kobe Bryant just based upon how much he was comparable to the greatest that ever played the game in Michael Jordan.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So with that being said, I do think that when you're talking about Roethlisberger using himself in a way where he's trying to rope-a-dope and be a little bit, you know, southpaw with how he's coming with his angles, I really believe it's almost culturally driven, right? If I look at it from this aspect, I'm okay with Ben and I'm with Ben. But on this side of it, I think it's 100% calculated what AB is saying. And the reason being is because there are a lot of people that AB is around. Super popular rappers, super popular up-and-coming players, super popular current players. And they are all in AB's corner. They're all in his camp. They're all in his community. And that might be one of the things that John Gruden was talking about. Stop listening to all these dudes in your ear. His community embraces him. So for whatever it's worth, he's okay with playing a villain's role, not because it's an NFL thing. It's a cultural thing that AB is leaning on right now.
I understand your point that there is some support out there for AB. Of course. He's a talented guy, and we worship talented guys, super talented. And he's got a nice little social media following, and people like to draft off of that. But I don't think he's calculated.
Right.
Because you're not deleting tweets hours later.
I mean, I might have been a misstep.
Several missteps. Because all AB has to do is what Marcellus has been selling all summer. Let your resume speak. Let your work speak. That's his only real defense against Big Ben.
But that's not what we do, though. We bite back. That's just, it's in us. It's in Ben, on the history of the league, everybody has always sided with the quarterback. Uh-huh. The quarterback can do no wrong. Yep. It's always the other guy's fault, especially when it comes to the receiver.
Doesn't
always
apply to Ben, though.
And so,
Ben was in a different position if AB played it right.
Yes.
Or continues to play it.
When you grow up how he grew up, you don't grow up the way you grew up and turn the shoulder and handle things with grace and clap. We gonna bite back. That's just the reality.
Here's my thing.
That's what it is.
But we're professionals. We're more mature. We're evolved. You got to play the game in the rules that you're playing in. So you need to adapt, I would say. But I want to say this. Since you leave doesn't mean you lost a divorce. Since AB is gone, doesn't mean he lost a divorce. He's down on the scorecard right now. I will have to say that. But this is the face-off moment. My boy Max Kellerman used to host this. Before the fight, when they both whooping. Mm-hmm. And no punches are thrown, but sometimes you leave a face-off like, oh, he gonna whoop his butt.
Yep.
And then you get in there, you be like, oh, what happened? You were talking big at the table. Ben could talk big at this table. And I give you this story that we used to always share. One of the homies got divorced. And we was like, damn, you look happy. Why are you not mad that you got divorced? He was like, look, when I was with my woman, with my wife, she was spending all my money. Now she divorced me, she can only spend half. And we were like, wow, that is next level. Ben is sitting in the house comfortable, feeling good. But AB like, look, man, I wasn't getting all my touches. Like, he was feeding Juju. He was giving some of my shine away, and he was taking shots at me. So maybe even in this half mindset, he's feeling like it's a hole because he's somewhere where he can feel the love.
I'll say this, and I get he's from Liberty City, I think, mm-hmm, or somewhere area. And so, but I'll say this, even about all these cats from the hood, let me tell you what men do, men and women. Most smart ones anyway, or any level, they pick fights they think they can win. That's what Floyd Mayweather has done his entire career. And we've blasted him for it. But that's human nature. That's what America has done. That's what anybody smart does. Now, you may lose a fight that you thought you could win, but you pick one.
Odds in your favor.
Name me an ultimate competitor that I ever thought they would lose.
Y'all going there. Deep.
name me one ultimate competitor that picked a fight and said, you know what, maybe I shouldn't.
You
pick
go
this
into
fight.
It I, thinking you're I got all this.
Of every them. Last every one. Every one last one I know.
But again,
every last one.
Some
of them
take Floyd Mayweather, who may go down as the greatest of all time. He was smart enough to only pick fights he could win.
He fought Canelo, and Canelo is up and coming, and had the punching power and the skill.
We know the rep on Floyd. We done heard every boxer in the world take a pot shot.
But who did he avoid? Who did he
until fought, it was he timing fought. In timing he picked the right time.
But maybe financially speaking,
I'm
that
a
was
boxing
the
fan.
Fight.
That's a myth.
Yeah,
that's a myth.
That other
still whooping.
Are
still
anyway,
whooping.
We go.
Yeah, we all lost something.
Yeah, we all lost something. Yeah.
Football season is coming up quick, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is celebrating with huge Week One contests. It all starts when Chicago and Green Bay kick off the season with a Thursday night single game showdown contest and $2.5 million in total prizes up for grabs. New users who sign up today on DraftKings using code SPEAK will receive a free shot at the $1 million top prize. Nothing adds to the excitement of watching the game quite like having a shot at a $1 million payday. Draft your single game showdown lineup and feel the sweat like never before. It's simple. Just draft six players from the season opener. Stay under the salary cap and see how your team stacks up against the competition. But you don't have to wait until week one to get in on the action. Right now, all users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. Download the DraftKings app now to get in on the action. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. And as an extra special week one bonus, new users can put in my code SPEAK to receive a free shot at $1 million with your first deposit. Don't forget the code SPEAK for your free shot at $1 million only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
TJ Houshmandzadeh and LeVar Arrington are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Houston, where Jadeveon Clowney has been holding out and has yet to sign his franchise tender with Houston. According to Pro Football Talk, he was actually planning to show up this week until he found out the team was trying to trade him. The former top pick is open to a trade, and reportedly his preferred destinations are Seattle and Philadelphia. He has already met with the Miami Dolphins. The question here is, should a contending team take a chance on Jadeveon Clowney? I say no. I've been unimpressed with Jadeveon Clowney's pro football career.
Man, I have to agree with you. A former number one pick who, even when healthy, is not as advertised, but still when healthy shows flashes of why you made him a number one pick. oddly familiar to what we've been talking about all week in Andrew Luck. I mean, coming off the edge is Andrew Luck by the name of Jadeveon Clowney. And look, I have nothing but respect for this guy. I remember meeting him when he was coming out through the draft process, really had tremendous, probably absurd expectations for him because I knew I played the position. I was like, man, you're a beast. Your physical nature, your mindset, you're ready. And the injuries maybe derailed him from ever realizing that full potential. But I remember when the guy was getting 6 sacks and people start losing their mind. Here he is. He's arrived. He's the man. And I'm like, damn, I remember the day when I had 6 sacks. They were about to cut me. They called me in the office. Like, Wiley, you okay? All right, one more of these, you out of here. And then I started to look. I said, okay, he is on the rise. Never double-digit sacks. Never. Like in our position, that's a standard. Like, don't even talk about greatness until you get double digits. So it's interesting if I'm upstairs, someone is thinking like you, thinking like me. Damn good. But what's the cost in this analysis? If I get what I want in return, Jadeveon Clowney will be in a different uniform just because, like Andrew Luck, as good as he is, not exactly what we thought he was going to be.
You can't totally measure it based off of how many sacks he's received. And even when you play it, you can't base it off of that. There are a lot of other intangibles. How do you play the run? You were a bigger, stronger defensive end. Mm-hmm. That could have even possibly been a defensive tackle. They chose to play you at defensive end because your athletic ability. Same thing goes for Jadeveon Clowney. He's been a durable player. He's been a Pro Bowl player. You don't necessarily have to be the sacks guy. They have a guy on that roster, by the way, who was a sacks guy for them.
Right.
He's been reliable, he's been dependable, and he can make plays. The one thing that people get confused about with playmakers is that you can't take a stat line and justify a playmaker. A playmaker may make a play. It may be one or two plays during the course of a game. That's not 12 tackles. That's not five sacks. That's not that. It's that one sack when it really mattered. It's that one play
and
when it really mattered.
And that's what he
mattered.
Doesn't have.
Well, I think he does.
He doesn't have.
I think he does. And for me, just looking at his career and following it as closely as I have because of the head coach there and how that connects to me, I look at it more from a systemic standpoint than I do a personal standpoint of Jadeveon Clowney. I think in the right situation, you will see what it is that people are possibly looking for in a realistic manner, not an imaginary manner, not a fantasy football manner. You'll see Jadeveon Clowney, if he's in a right situation, like a Philly situation, would be a great situation for Jadeveon.
I'm taking a chance on him. He's 26 years old, and we know from playing, J.J. Watt is going to get put in every advantageous situation possible. We're going to try to get him on the back. We're going to try to get him on a weaker tackle. That's just what it is.
J.J. Watt gets double-teamed most plays, but go ahead.
They're going to double-team, but they're going to try to get him in advantageous situations. And you know that from game planning.
Yes.
When you're a defensive player, that defensive coordinator is going to game plan to get you in certain situations. You're 26 years old. If you're the Philadelphia Eagles, you're going to draft late in the first round anyway. Who's the Eagles' defensive coordinator?
Who's the Eagles' defensive coordinator?
You want me to Google?
Wide nine. They run the wide. Used to be the head
Forever.
Coach.
Yeah, the coach of the line.
Schwartz. Wide nine. You put him in that defense with his athleticism.
Nice.
He'll do damage in that defense. You need to be in a situation.
On which down?
On every down. He plays the run well.
Any down.
When you're his size playing in Houston, you're in a 3-4 defense.
Jadeveon Clowney, every down.
As a defensive end in a 4-3 wide nine? Come on.
Can I machine?
With that athleticism, wide nine, you don't think he can have success?
Yeah, he can, but the best indicator of future performance is past performance.
It's a completely different.
I got a machine gun.
3-4,
right
4-3.
Let me shoot this gun.
Let's
I got a lot of bullets, right? First of all, he's not reliable. He's only played 16 games one of his 5 years, including one of them where he had only 2 games, another year when he only had 9. So let's not say reliable.
9 was early on. 13.
We only got 5 years to pick. I'm just going to give y'all my facts. 2, the moments you're talking about. Few and far between based on expectations of a number one overall pick who shouldn't need circumstances in the perfect team, should dictate circumstances no matter what team he's on if you're a number one pick.
Man, I played push
that.
Okay.
That is true. I agree with that.
Are we not done?
I'm not going
to
agree
with that.
When
you're talking about a double team and J.J. Watt, if I'm an offensive coordinator, I see J.J. Watt there and he's getting double teamed, sometimes triple teamed. I played in a situation where Bruce Smith was getting double and triple teamed. I said, yeah, because I'm about to eat. He hasn't eaten to the degree that you would expect somebody opposite.
Well, you're in a 3-4 defense. That's completely different.
Bruce Smith is the NFL sack leader, and he played in the 3-4 defense. Y'all stop with this. I played this position, y'all.
He had Cornelius Bennett and Daryl Talley outside of him. Those are defensive ends playing linebacker.
It's still a 3-4 defense, but he played in a down.
If you're running games with defensive ends that can run like those guys,
we don't have a lot of time. We don't have a lot of time. We got to go.
Yeah.
But look, I'm just going to tell you, the question about Clowney coming in was a bad motor. That motor don't run all the time. Before we go further, I'd like to address the notion that U.S. women's soccer star Carly Lloyd, or any woman playing in the NFL, advances the cause of equality. I disagree. Lloyd trying out for an NFL team is a hey, look at me gimmick that diminishes the importance of women's soccer. Yesterday, Lloyd and her trainer continued their media blitz promoting the idea that at 37 years old, she is serious about attempting to make an NFL roster in 2020. Lloyd told Fox Sports, "I'm having discussions with my husband and my trainer, James Galanis, about the reality of playing in the NFL. They both feel that I could do it and should consider it. I'm seriously considering it as it's a challenge." Galanis told ESPN, "If she's going to do this, she'll do it. She'll train in the offseason. She'll get herself ready so that she just doesn't do it for the sake of doing it." Lloyd told NBC Sports, "I don't want to go in there blindly. I want to actually attempt to do it, but I know that I definitely could do it because anything I set my mind to do, I can do it. And I actually do kick balls for a living. So yeah, it's all about technique, and we'll see what happens." This is a media marketing blitz to promote Carly Lloyd, not equality for women. When it comes to self-promotion, male and female athletes are equals. Hell, the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team is starting to make me believe women are superior. Megan Rapinoe's Trump trolling was every bit as effective as Colin Kaepernick's kneeling and obliterated LeBron James's equality t-shirts and Taco Tuesday rants. And now Carly Lloyd's fight to get into the NFL training camp is rivaling Antonio Brown's hot air balloons and helmet hoax. She's turned an edited video of one long-distance kick she made at Eagles practice into a marketing campaign that I'm sure Nike or some other shoe company will soon exploit. You go, girl. But could we pass on promoting this as one giant step for womankind? This is about milking the publicity generated from the World Cup. This is about Carly Lloyd's bank account. We've already seen this movie. The last time the World Cup made this kind of impact was in 1994 when the matches were held here in the United States. The U.S. men's team advanced to the knockout round. The big star was goalie Tony Meola. The Jets signed him thinking he could be their kickoff specialist while Nick Lowry handled field goals and extra points. Meola bombed. They called him Captain Hook. He was cut after 3 preseason games. Carly Lloyd wants to be the next Ronda Rousey. Remember when the media sold the lie Rousey could beat up Floyd Mayweather? This is a publicity stunt. All right, TJ Husmanzadeh and LeVar Arrington have returned. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Mm. Is this actually a publicity stunt?
Damn, I hate to say this, but yeah, it is. And because I know there's a greater effect that she's desiring, I know there's a greater cause and spirit behind this. But this is a publicity stunt. One, we didn't hear about this in the non-World Cup year. 2, we also didn't hear about this in the last World Cup when she was a star of the team. So as you're going and fighting for your soccer life, you're trying to birth a new life in post-career soccer. And that looks like what this opportunity is at its core. I just talk to everyone who's out there in spirit really desiring this. As long as those same open-minded people who are encouraging this don't close their minds when she gets exposed to dangers beyond her normal physical reality, that y'all still open-minded. Because when you're on that field, I'm not even talking gender. I'm just talking about physicality. And there are physiological differences you can highlight, but if she could deal with those rigors and you allow everyone to play in the same spirit of football, men and women, let's see this play out. But in small and in large, unfortunately, this is wrapped with one publicity bow.
I don't buy that. I buy into opportunity presents itself, and if you're willing to explore that, you go with it. I coach a girl at my high school team. She carried the ball this past week, recorded 5 yards running the ball. I gave that young lady the football to run in the game that we played. Now, I don't think it's about equality. I think it is she practiced just like everybody else did. You don't turn anybody away who comes out for the team. She made the team just like everybody else did.
How about the player on your
team? On my team, yep. Right? So when it came down to it and I was able to play my reserves, she got an opportunity just like everybody else did. I look at this opportunity here as no different than any other kicker that goes into the league. There are very few kickers that are humans in the football locker room. Very few. I can recall John Hall, a human. Vanderjack, a human. Some of these guys are human. Jay Feely, a human. All right? Is Feely, is it Jay?
Jay Feely, yeah, that's the homie, yeah.
He's a human. He's my roommate.
I love it.
We always had a saying, Whit, kickers are people too. Okay? So understand this. We're not talking about
they get tryouts off of one video.
We're not
off of one kick.
There's a homeless man that dude that was homeless that now has a roster spot on a football team.
Yeah.
So the reality of it is, the reality to me is if she can kick that ball as good as anybody else that kicks that ball, and she can put points on the board just like anybody else that kicks that ball, she's a human too. Give her an opportunity to do it. If she can't do it, she can't do it. But be clear, you're talking about physical rigors.
You just proved a
physical rigors, though. Come on, man. How many kickers get hit?
Does it happen? Yes. Second of all, you say,
come on.
It happens. They wouldn't try to take a shot at it.
Take a shot at current kickers.
Because it's a World Cup year, that's why she got this opportunity. That's number one.
Right.
They invited her out.
Of course.
Oh, let's see if you can kick some field goals. She impressed them. But you have to take into account, she had a run-up that is not like a field goal kick in a game.
They didn't show any of the misses.
We don't even have to show the misses because no equipment. You don't have to show the misses. It's a different ball game.
When you got people coming at you.
And not even that. There's no linemen. There's no defense. You kick a ball low to get distance.
Gonna hit people.
Those kids can be blocked. Now, if you're going to go work on it, whether it's a publicity stunt or not, it's a lot harder than she thinks. There's people been doing this their entire life. And then when they get to the pressure of an NFL kick, they can't do it.
But she won a World Cup. She was kicking the ball in a World Cup game.
And when this comes around, you're going to be 38 years old. It's just a different ball game. And it might be some guys that say, you know what? Let this kick get blocked or let her kick off.
That's where
I'm a banger.
Well, the kickoff thing will never happen. But I don't.
They're not going to keep two kickers on the team. She's going to have to kick off.
They might have a specialist.
They would do it for their publicity and the attention and the ratings.
She might get a preseason game.
They would do it. But I do think this is 1,000% about publicity. I don't think she said, anything I set my mind to do, I can do. I'm so tired of this with all of American society that everybody thinks anything they want to do, they can do if I just set my mind to it. That's bogus. That's total.
I love it.
It's total.
You can do it.
It's bogus.
You can do it.
And then the other thing, I'm taking a lot of heat over social media about this, and I just go, I'm just saying she's 37 and trying to launch an NFL career.
But kicking.
Hold on. I don't care what it is. That's unprecedented. There's never been a 37-year-old launch their career. We've never seen a woman in the NFL. And so if I say, man, I just don't think this is a reality, that's common sense.
That is common sense. That's true.
And now people are accusing me, you're being contrarian. How we've made common sense contrarian thought.
No, I agree with that point.
That's what's amazing to me. And that's what, again, this is why when I look at.
Man, football is a combat sport.
NBC,
ESPN, Fox Sports.
Oh, you got a daughter? Would you want your daughter out there playing football with your boys?
My daughter was 12 years old last year and raced.
We didn't say race. We didn't say, would you want her on that football field this Friday night playing?
It's not my place to tell my daughters what their dreams are. It's not.
Would you want her to do it?
It's my job to support them. If she wanted to try it, I would support her. If she got knocked out, I would tell her, I supported you, but now we're going to make a common sense decision.
Does your support blindly put her into harm's way?
And I tell you this because I want to stick to metrics because the opinions can go everywhere.
Sure.
I'm going to stick to metrics. When you brought up track, when you talk about physicality in the physical realm, it's not apples to apples someone playing high school football, because we all know if a girl playing high school football and a boy playing high school football is closer to an equal playing field than at the pro level. Let's just be real about
maturity.
This. Let's talk about this. Girls peak faster than boys. But men peak higher than women in a physical realm. So let's just use
it. We're talking about a kicker.
Okay, we're talking about a physical sport. It's called football.
She's not getting in part. She's not getting.
So we're not playing
the bar. You know, guys come off that edge on kickoffs, on kick, on field goals,
and hit
the kickers all the time.
Yeah, I do.
Guys come over the top and hit the kicker on follow-through and all that.
That's true.
It happens.
And a block kick.
Yes.
And a block kick.
Y'all are acting like women are frail. I will go with you on your opinion of common sense of somebody at 37 years old, whether man or woman,
starting their career.
I'm with you there.
This is a publicity stunt.
But I'm not going with y'all on the fact that she may or may not be able to handle the physicality of kicking a ball. And somebody may come body slam her or hit her after she kicks the ball. I'm not subscribing to that. If they could go 9 months and give us babies, I know they know a different type of pain than we. They know a different type of pain than we do.
Yeah.
So I'm not sitting there and going to sit there and diminish the fact that, that she
could
take
a hit.
Yes.
Thank you. She came off the bench this year in
it
World
is,
Cup.
It is, but I'm defending
she
you. Know.
She came off the bench this year in World Cup.
Duh.
The only way to get on talk shows is this.
Dog, it's so offensive to me as a football player. Forget my manhood as a football player. That somebody in another sport, I don't care man or woman, is on the bench. And they say, but I could come start in your league. And I'm like, wait a minute. What you talking about?
I mean,
do you know what this takes?
None of us here can kick that field goal she made.
No.
I'll say that first of all. But it's a different ball game, man. You got kids that have been doing this their whole life, and they get to the NFL, we talking men, and that pressure gets to them.
Hey, guys. Jason Whitlock here. September is National Life Insurance Awareness Month. Most people aren't aware of that. In fact, most people aren't aware they need life insurance at all. That's why 40% of Americans don't have it. But getting life insurance doesn't need to be difficult or expensive. Right now, prices are the lowest they've been in 20 years, and Policy Genius has made it easier than ever to get covered. Policy Genius is the easy way to shop for life insurance online. In minutes, you can compare quotes from top insurers to find your best price. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all paperwork and red tape. If you need life insurance but you just haven't gotten around to it, National Life Insurance Awareness Month is as good a time as any to get started. Go to PolicyGenius.com, get quotes, and apply in minutes. You can do the whole thing on your phone right now. Policy Genius, the easy way to compare and buy life insurance.
Joined now by Fox Sports college football analyst Joel Klatt. Let's talk some college football.
Let's do it.
Where the season will get fully underway with a full slate of games this weekend. Not surprisingly, Clemson and Alabama enter the year ranked number 1 and 2, respectively. And our own Reggie Bush is already predicting a rematch of Dabo Swinney and Nick Saban's teams in the championship game. If that happens, it would mark the fourth time in 5 years the two teams face off for the title. I've got no problem with this. Actually look forward to it, but we've got our college football expert here. Would another Clemson-Bama national championship game be bad for college football?
I don't know if it'd be bad for college football. I don't think it would be great. I do think that interest would maybe wane a little bit, in particular in that game specifically. But let's be fair. I don't want to take away from greatness. Is the Patriots' domination of the NFL taking away from the NFL? I would say no. Was dynasties tend to be hated from the outside, and yet we all will watch them. You know, so right now you have to understand there's a couple of things at play here, and it's really the structure of college football. If the NFL is built for 8-8, which I think we would all argue it is, right? The way that the draft works, the way that the scheduling works, the way that the salary cap works, everything is really built for 8-8, and you're either going to excel out of that or you're going to fall below it. Well, in college football, we're built for dynasties. The best teams make the most money generally. They can hire the most assistant coaches. They can keep the most assistant coaches. They generally get the best prospects in recruiting. Then they can go out there and make their own schedule. And I would argue that Clemson and Alabama, at least in schedule makeup, have created some of the easier roads for themselves. And let me give you an example of that. Michigan is going to play at one point this season, 7 consecutive weeks against Power 5 teams or Notre Dame. The most consecutive weeks that Clemson or Alabama is going to play against Power 5 opponents is 3. So the schedule makeup is different for these teams playing 8 conference games than other teams playing 9 conference games. So when you put together the nature of college football, the structure of how we do things, we're built for dynasties. This is actually what should happen when you get the right head coach and the support from the administration in your university is that you should be good for a long time. Ooh. So I don't want to diminish the accomplishment of those programs by saying it's bad for college football. Do we need another champion at some point? Probably.
For me, I love it. And this is just David and Goliath reconstructed. And if you think about it, in this situation of college football, David is the field. And Goliath is Clemson and Alabama. You got to look at it through that lens. And it had me watching Miami and Florida this weekend, number 8 Florida, to see when is David going to actually rise up and could beat Goliath, Clemson or Alabama.
It didn't seem like it in that game, did it?
It didn't seem like it in that game, but I will watch this weekend as well, just rooting for that other team. These are moments that we've had in our lives where we loved it. Let's go through our favorite era, at least mine, of basketball in the NBA. It was the 80s and Lakers and Celtics. And we talk about 3 head-to-head matchups. Every game you watched, you knew at the end it was going to be Boston or the Lakers.
Sure.
And we loved it. Ben Johnson versus Carl Lewis. Yeah, I watched the prelims, the semifinals, but damn it, I want to see Carl Lewis race Ben Johnson.
Sure.
That's all it was. I remember a few years ago, everyone disappointed. Man, we never got to see Kobe go against LeBron. Because we like this. When we can go out there as advertised, greatness is going to be exampled on the field, and then we see them collide at the end. I'm all in for it.
And I think, and Joel, help me if I'm wrong here, the production staff, Tua and Trevor Lawrence have a chance to be back-to-back number one picks at the quarterback position.
Yeah, Tua after this year, and then Trevor would have to stay one more year.
Yeah. Yep. And so when have we ever seen the best 2 quarterbacks in all of college football clash for the national championship? The 2 clearly best players in college football potentially could meet at the quarterback position. This would be like, this year in particular, this would be like, nah, you know what? I don't really don't want to see Brady and Manning in their prime play each other in the Super Bowl or in the AFC championship game. I damn sure want to see Tua and Trevor Lawrence clash this year with Tua fully recovered from whatever injuries he had, Trevor Lawrence potentially going to be one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen in college football. This year, more than any other year, I want to see Clemson and Alabama.
I mean, I think maybe for a national championship, off the top of my head, maybe it was Matt Leinart against Vince Young.
Yep, different level, but yes.
Top 10 picks in the same draft, right. So it wasn't back-to-back years like you're talking about, but just that level, right?
Yeah.
Like great quarterback play facing off against each other. There's certainly that. And remember now, college football is more about the head coach than it is the quarterback. So in the NFL, we talk about your organization is going to go how your quarterback goes. You got to have that guy. Well, in college football, you've got to have the head coach. These 2 guys are the best 2 doing it.
Right.
So even more maybe than Tua Trevor, which I love the point. I think it's a very astute point. You also have those 2 guys on the screen, Dabo against Nick Saban. I love that. You know, I love these juggernauts going up against each other. But to your point, we need somebody else to rise up. Georgia is close. They've had the lead against Bama twice in the last 2 years in the fourth quarter, one in the national championship game, one in the SEC championship game. Maybe Texas is that team with Tom Herman that can potentially rise up and challenge one of these 2 teams. I'm looking for that challenger. I think that would make the sport even better, is if we got another hat into that ring.
Darnell, you got a problem with Bama Clemson?
Not at all. I mean, I want to see the 2 best teams face off. And Clatt, I think the challenger you're looking for might be Ball State. So,
Y'all better beat Columbia first.
We got IU coming up with the Lucasoil Stadium, so stay tuned to that.
Y'all can't beat that.
Listen, I study a lot of college football. I got to be honest, I don't know Ball State's schedule.
All right, guys. But yeah, sticking with college football, the spotlight, you know, was on Jim Harbaugh in Michigan now that Urban Meyer's here with us at Fox, and Harbaugh's rolling the dice, saying he has 2 quarterbacks he likes in Shea Patterson and Dylan McCaffrey, and he intends to play both, adding, quote, all options are open in that way. I want to ask you guys, do you think this is a good idea?
No. I don't like it at all.
I love it. Trevor Lawrence, Kelly Bryant last year worked out. You could rethink this decision in four games without losing eligibility. Hey, I like it.
Not only that, but you had Jalen Hurts have to come in for the SEC championship game and bail out an injured Tua to get Bama to the playoff last year. Yeah. So maybe you need two guys. Plus, they're in different veins, right? They're not the same player.
Right.
And so you can run a little bit different style of offense with each guy.
Two quarterbacks mean you don't know what you're doing, and particularly when you're talking about two in different veins and two different lanes. Jim Harbaugh needs to, Shea Patterson's his senior quarterback. Stick with him. Let the guy go as far as he can. Don't have some young kid looking over his shoulder.
This is also the most Jim Harbaugh thing of all time, right? Mm. I mean, we don't even get too deep when we're covering his game. I sit with him on Fridays, and I'm like, hey, is this your lineup? And he's like, all options are open. And it's like, hey, man, we're in a broadcast meeting. You know what I mean? So there is some degree. I know that it's news, and we might see Dylan McCaffrey, but it also might just be business as usual with Shea as the starting quarterback.
Joel Klatt is back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
Yes, sir. Let's stay here in town right at USC.
Yeah, yeah.
Quarterback Jack Sears finished fourth in the Trojans quarterback competition this spring.
Fight.
Has become the latest high-profile player to enter the transfer portal to try and play somewhere else. And for those that don't know, the transfer portal rule went into effect last October, and it allows players to pursue other opportunities without asking permission from their current school, something they couldn't do previously. And as a former player myself, I actually like this because it gives players more leverage. But I want to pass it to you, Joel, and ask you, do you think the portal is good for college football?
Yes, overall. Now, I think that it needs to be tweaked a little bit, and I think that the portal should actually shut down once the season starts and then open back up once the season ends. And the only reason is because I think that there's a right and wrong way to transfer. I'm all for these players owning their future and owning their opportunities, but I really love the way Jalen Hurts did it versus the way that we've seen, like, Jake Haener at Washington. He left Washington. Now you got Sears at USC. I understand trying to keep your options open, but remember, you've got a role to play on a team for that season. So I wish that the transfer portal was just in the offseason.
Mm. I love the transfer portal. I don't want to tweak too much because I want guys like Jack Sears, who was a four-star recruit, who finds himself now behind a sophomore, a freshman, and a redshirt junior. And that's before we get another recruiting class in here of four or five-star guys. And you never have an opportunity. Look, there are on-the-field choices and off-the-field choices, and you make a collegiate choice based on your opportunities. I love what he said. Look, you have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
But you can change your plan if you don't reach your goal, but never change your goal. And his goal is to try and get to the next level. So why is he going to stay in a situation where he's stuck in concrete as a third, fourth, maybe even fifth stringer? So transfer portal gives you the opportunity.
No, he can't change it for this season, though. So, right. Like, he's got avenues. Like, I think it's fair to criticize him for leaving now and also say he deserves opportunities in the future. There are plenty of means to transfer and play and stay eligible later in your career. I just think that once you – I mean, this guy takes snaps all fall. He's in the meetings. He's got a role to play on this team, and then he leaves. What if Jalen Hurts took his ball and left from Alabama last year?
No,
I think there's a right and wrong way to do it.
I just think there's better solutions than the transfer portal. One of the biggest mistakes I think we make in college athletics is limiting guys – to 5 years. Why can't a guy play six? And I'm talking about in all sports. Give him 6 years of eligibility and then make him reach a bar before you let him transfer. You commit to a school. If your coach stays, I think you should stay 4 years. Then you can transfer and go play someplace else 2 years. The reason I say that is because my college experience was very, I wouldn't say it's unique, but it was very humbling. It was part of my learning process. I was probably Ball State's first or second recruit. Came off a powerhouse high school team, was captain of the team, and I was a major disappointment for 2 years. And most of it my fault. Had a coach that I couldn't stand, offensive line coach, treated me poorly, tried to humble me. I needed to be humbled. And I didn't need to just quit, transfer, do other things. I needed to be humble. I needed to go through that experience. And then the next 2 years, I had a very positive experience. We got a new coach, Lawrence Cooley. We hit it off, and things went well for me the next 2 years. But without that experience of being humbled, if I had been allowed to quit, and trust me, I wanted to quit, and both my parents are like, are you crazy? you ain't coming home here. And so I'm glad I was forced to stick it out. I think some of these guys need to be forced to stick it out because you just never know what's going to happen.
I don't think you only get humbled in failure or disappointment. You also get humbled in success. Like, imagine if you're a starter, you hit a dry patch, you're not playing well, whatever it is. Humility comes in a lot of different forms and facets. So let's not just say that you only have to lose something to all of a sudden realize what you've lost. Sometimes you can win, attain it, and still lose parts of it and realize that perspective. I just feel for all these guys. My deeper issue, and it's coming out in this subject, is these guys, 4 or 5-star guys, continuously just get into this pack, into this cattle call to the same schools, and then wake up and realize, oh, I'm never going to get a chance to show who I am.
Right.
What were you thinking? Yeah. I will always tell them, go to the highest academically ranked school. It's a lesser athletic school, more than likely, but get to shine and have this uber successful fan base and alumni base support you.
Yeah.
I don't understand their calculus when they get in these situations.
I mean, there's so much, and I love your point. I love your point. And you guys bring up all great points. And one of the things also I'll just end on with this is there are going to be disappointments in everybody's career,
yeah,
college or pro. I mean, you're going to deal with adversity at some point.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that I don't love a live transfer portal during the season is because it presents an avenue and an outlet for that disappointment and adversity in real time. There's no cooling off period. You lose a job, next day, I'm out.
Yeah.
Guess how many guys feel like they want to leave the day after losing their job? Almost everybody.
Man.
Now, there were times, I walked in one time, the first spring I was competing for the starting quarterback job, I walked in one day after 1 7-on-7 that I played poorly, and they were doing live depth chart every day.
Yeah.
I was third. Yeah. I was like, man, I'm out of here. If I had a transfer portal, that would have been the worst possible thing for me because I could have run to that transfer portal versus having the cooling off period, learning how to compete, learning how to deal with adversity, and get through the season.
I got to say this quickly. I was going to transfer Columbia to go to Cal Berkeley, where I was going to go initially out of high school. There was no transfer portal, but I was ready to move on because the scouts weren't looking at me after my junior year. Imagine if I did. Who knows what would happen, but they end up coming. So, yeah, get you.
All right, Darnell, you got something else?
Yes, sir. I want to move over to high school sports. A new survey of high school athletic programs reveals that participation in sports has declined for the first time in 30 years. This is the biggest drop, was in football, which fell by more than 30,000 players to its lowest level in almost 20 years. I want to ask you guys, should we be concerned about the drop in high school football?
Yes, I think without question. My concern, though, isn't just high school football. Mm-hmm. When I hear for the first time in 30 years, participation in high school sports is down, this is, why I'm so defensive about football. It is the driver of high school sports participation, and it's like we're trying to create this society where sports are being diminished and not seen as a positive mm-hmm. tool to shape and mold young people, and I just completely disagree with it.
I totally agree, and that's what's alarming to me. Listen, if football, if you said, hey, you know, participation in football is diminishing, I'd say, okay, as long as other sports are increasing, because I don't want kids just going home. I don't want kids not in a team environment. I don't want kids without mentors and coaches to help them through those points and times of adversity through their formative years. That's the alarming part, is that all participation is down, which means they're not playing football. Okay, well and good. That doesn't mean they're playing lacrosse or soccer or anything else. They're just, hey, man, like, let's go play online video games. You know what I mean? That to me,
esports is going like, and look, no,
that's a problem.
That, yeah,
that's the problem that I have. You know, because I don't think it's a safety issue, and ultimately, I think the character of our country will get hurt eventually by people not playing in team sports, where you must be selfless in order to succeed.
People are missing what's really happening. I think this is beautiful, and I'm gonna tell you why. The cause is really technology, and gaming. Sports is a means to an end, using your body. But the way to the absolute top is using what's between your ears. So when did Mark Zuckerberg start Facebook? Anybody? February 4th, 2004.
So Facebook was born and kids were born that are now 15 years old. If you're 15, where are you? In high school. And they look over and they're in these STEM programs instead of on the field. And they're looking at sports like, oh, I see the love for it and I see what you get out of it, but there's a different calculus. So what used to be is I want to be like Mike, be like Michael Jordan, who's worth $1.9 billion. Amazing. But now people want to be like Mark, who's worth $67 billion. He's looking at Michael Jordan, said, let me get 35 of those and have some change, y'all. This is what's happening. I am involved with a lot of STEM programs around Los Angeles. These kids are saying, Peyton Manning was amazing, wasn't he? LeBron is insane. My friend, you don't know his name. He's just sitting at home using between his ears, and he's going to get the opportunities and net worth beyond what these guys are getting on the field. And look, I understand what sports gives us back, but if you're talking about what you can give back to your family in terms of generational wealth, these kids are doing a different equation.
That's a financial calculus.
Yes.
That, you know, has some merit to that argument.
Some.
But I don't want to, this is bigger than just financial. Again, because, again, you can give a bunch of, people can make a lot of money, and I got a lot of problems with the people in Silicon Valley. They got a lot of money. I don't think their character is that strong. I don't think the society they're trying to build will work as effectively as the ones that got us to this point. And so that's my, I just think.
But that's a subjective argument against, against objective numbers. I'm giving you why the objective numbers are going down, because people are looking at it objectively and say, what's the end game?
Listen, if they're involved, then I'm for it.
Right.
If it's in the STEM programs, if it's in lacrosse, whatever it is, I'm fine with football's numbers diminishing. I really am, because I think the top of the line football is still one of the greatest ways out of the poverty-stricken areas of our country that we have.
Yeah, right.
And football allows that opportunity. It's an avenue. And as long as kids are involved, I think that's the biggest part. So, if that's right, they're in the
STEM. But what are they involved in? Again, are they involved in learning how to communicate and deal with people who are different than them, who have different thoughts than them? That's what I worry about, because I'm telling you, sports, I've seen people through sports get along with people they have nothing in common with.
I don't disagree.
And so I just don't know if you learned that.
Oh, the STEM teams I'm around, you should see the demographics. It's similar to a huddle.
But it's still an individual sport.
Well, STEM is not, it's about science, engineering, technology, mathematics.
But so, for yourself,
yeah,
right?
It's almost
not like you're not competing with a team.
No, you're trying to learn robotics and automation, and you're trying to do programming. And it's really like, it's a different way to really activate yourself. A glorified academic decathlon team, which I was on as a youth. So it's just a different engineering of how to get to the top.
I like being dumb.
Hey, folks, it's your man, Keyshawn Johnson, here to talk about Angie. Formerly known as Angie's List, your go-to home services. Marketplace for getting all your jobs done well. Now, you might be wondering, what exactly is Angie? Well, let me tell you. It's the nation's largest home services marketplace, connecting over 150 million homeowners with skilled professionals to tackle any project, big or small. As a homeowner myself, I always have things I want to work on for my house, whether it's general home renovations or fun projects like putting in a pool. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it a breeze to research, compare, and hire pros, ensuring every job is done well. Whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or planning a full kitchen renovation, Angie's got your back. And get this, folks. Angie's pros aren't just any old contractors. They're your neighbors, often running small businesses right in your community. Plus, they've been rated and reviewed by others in your area, so you know you're getting quality service. So why stress over home projects when you can turn to Angie? From finding the best price to scheduling a pro at your convenience, Angie's got you covered every step of the way. So get started today at Angie.com. That's Angie.com, or download the app today to get started on getting all your jobs done. That's Angie, your trusted ally in home services.
TJ Husmanzadeh and LeVar Arrington are back. Let's move to the Cowboys, who have yet to make progress on Ezekiel Elliott's new deal. And that may be by design, according to Cowboys reporter Clarence Hill. After Zeke made his contract demands known before camp, Jerry Jones and company made a counteroffer and haven't changed it all summer. And it sounds like Jerry is happy to wait out his biggest star.
We've got a marathon here, and we want Zeke when we get to the playoffs. We want Zeke when we're in the dog days of this season. As you well know, you have to plan your personnel, and you have to manage. You have to manage a player the caliber of Zeke. We have to be prepared to play without any given player, and we may very well play without a player that is not coming in on his contract. So if that's the case, we'll just play, and we'll play, and we'll play well.
All right, sounds like the Cowboys are prepared to go without Zeke. They're playing a little hardball here. I don't think they have any other option.
Yeah, and I actually like it. As much as I'm player-friendly and for our player rights, if you're looking at it from the Cowboys' perspective, which you have to respect, you got 2 years left on your contract, and you keep talking about Todd Gurley. Okay, my name is Jerry Jones, and I'm going to tell you what I want some of this Todd Gurley. You know what Todd Gurley didn't give the Rams last year? What they needed at the end. He was there for the Rams game, balled out, but then we know the injury issue started to catch up to him at the end of the marathon that matters most when you cross the finish line. So he's looking at Zeke like, I gave you enough passes. I've invested enough into you to the point where now you want a trip. And now, I don't know if you and Cabo checking out our schedule, but our first six games are winnable, brother. Giants, Redskins, Dolphins, Saints, L. Packers, Jets, four at least are winnable. And if you're believing in your team, you're like, if we're going to be a good team, we need to beat these teams even without Zeke. Because if we got to bring in Zeke by his demands, then we're not the team who I think we are in terms of construction. So Jerry still wants props for his issue with Emmitt Smith and the personnel discussed that people always question him about. And Jerry's going to get it now because his ego's involved in this negotiation.
That could very well be what the interpretation of it is, but I took a different one from what he was saying. I looked at it as him saying to all of the Dallas fans, to Zeke himself, to Zeke's agent, his family, anybody else that's involved, take your time. It's a marathon. You don't want to be in right now? Don't be in right now. We got to play. I feel like there was not an aggressive tone to what Jerry was saying about Zeke in that presser. And in my opinion, my takeaway from it is he's basically letting Zeke know that, hey, like, we're going to play, but I don't feel as though we're not going to get something done. It's not a sprint. We're not sprinting to get you back, a player of his caliber. The things that he used to explain Zeke, I felt like he gave justification for Zeke to be right where he is right now.
Come on, man. Get out of here with that.
Get him, TJ, please.
It might sound crazy.
What coach owner doesn't want their best players there?
They want them there. He wants them there.
We're going to play, and we're going to play well. Luckily for the Cowboys, in their defense, their schedule on paper looks pretty easy to start to see. I mean, they're going to beat the Saints. The Saints, I don't think, are going to be the type of team they were. The Cowboys could probably start off 4-5-0. They do that. This is going to stretch into the season. Marcellus, your argument with Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott is completely off base from on-the-field production. Gurley came into the league with injuries, knee surgeries. Ezekiel Elliott has been healthy. His only misstep, and I say only, is off the field, is why he's like, do we want to give him this type of money now?
No, I'm talking about the last year, Gurley. Gurley last year didn't finish the marathon.
I mean, he couldn't finish it because he came into the league.
No, not those
with
years.
Problems.
We're talking about last year. Gurley didn't got the deal. Last year didn't finish the deal.
But Ezekiel Elliott hasn't shown that he can't go all the way through. They didn't play as long and as far as the Rams did. He's. I mean, you look.
He's durable.
He's 600 yards, basically more than the next guy.
Point. If the dude's durable already, why are you even talking about? I want you to just rest and relax.
No, he don't.
Like you said, no owner, no coach ever says this.
No.
This is the play that you do with your girlfriend. You know you love her. You know you want her. But you're like, if you want to leave, leave.
Go ahead.
Like, you know damn well. I hope she don't leave.
I hope she don't go. And as soon as she start getting her. I was just playing, right?
I was just playing. Come on, man. Stop.
LeVar, I think you're way off base here. Yeah, I think that the Cowboys and Jerry have been given no choice but to play hardball
they
with this dude.
To,
because Zeke chose to play hardball, which to me has been bad strategy.
Oh, it's just the wrong time.
Jerry Jones loves this dude. Mm. You should have baited Jerry with more love and affection towards him and good behavior coming to camp. And then, again, I said it yesterday. And then at the end of training camp, he will say, I'm not going to play during the regular season. do that, but in going adversarial with Jerry, now Jerry's like, okay, we're going to handle this without
you. I just didn't hear
they need to put you on retainer. That was some advice, right? That's what you do.
Yeah, player
man,
friendly.
This is only for yourself. He's not the representation of Ezekiel. Ezekiel, hold out and do what you need to do.
Nah,
Jerry just
Lamar,
said.
Don't do
Jerry
that.
Just said it's a marathon, not a sprint, bro.
Don't do that.
Forget what they say.
Don't do
enjoy
it.
Enjoy Cabo, man.
Reconsider. Read some litter.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Antonio Brown.
You know.
Marcellus said some really crazy things today.
That's how you gonna play it?
Yeah, I know. Surely he's your big dummy of the day.
Most definitely. Listen here, most big dummy of the day go to the person that said, my college coach had one job, to humble me. Needless to say, that man must have failed miserably.
Yeah, he out of work.
Out of work.
Still working on this.
What's his name, Waldo?
let's get to Antonio Brown.
He had one job.
I say
this dude
is trying to become the Floyd Mayweather of football. Yesterday on Twitter, he said he and Big Ben were never friends. Marcellus, question, who do you think is going to have a better season, Big Ben or AB?
I say it's Big Ben. I think Juju will have some struggles in the transition from being a number two to number one. I saw this up and close with a Peerless Price, who was a tremendous number two, struggled a little at the number one position. But I just think that duo will be better than what we're going to see out of Carr and AB. AB's going to do all he can do. Carr's going to do all he can do. But I just think there's limitations on that roster that's going to hinder him.
Uncle Jimmy, Big Ben is my vote as well. Who's going to have the better season, Big Ben or AB?
First of all, I'd like to say that I've been sitting here on behalf of the Money Mayweather team. And I would like to say that we resemble this whole conversation.
What?
And I'd like to have the minutes to reflect it as thus. Okay? First of all, I would like to say that all of y'all are perpetrating a fraud by even putting AB's name in the same comparison as my grandson Floyd Money Mayweather. Look here, just because AB show up to work don't mean he gonna actually be working. Okay?
That's true.
When has anybody ever said anything about Floyd not being a waker?
That's true.
Okay,
that's
okay, true. Let me tell you something. You might question whether or not he can decipher the difference between a noun and a predicate, but you can't never question his work ethic.
That is true. Could you get to
Look
the
here.
Point?
Oh, wait a minute. We Mayweathers is worth $560 million. That's why we call it the MMT.
What?
AB's team is worth $30 million. We the MMT, the Mayweather money team. They the CCP, the chump change team.
Money team versus chump change.
Money, big money, big bank take little bank.
You there it is. How it work. There it is.
Hey, man, AB running around here giving money a bad name. Hey, man, for real. People talking about AB, money made AB crazy. It made him lazy. The boy was crazy as hell before he ever got a dime.
That's good.
Listen here. Floyd is worth a half a billion.
A billion.
Worth a half $1 billion and ain't never showed you a picture of his feet.
That's true.
Let me tell you something. We made from old money. You know, we didn't inherit 40 acres and a mule. We got a duplex and two sheep. And was happy to get it.
Who's going to have
AB got that new money.
Yeah, answer the question, Papa.
Mickey Mack the stupid.
Papa Mayweather, can you answer the question?
Who's going to have a better season?
Yeah.
AB or Big Ben, please?
Of course, Big Ben. First of all, Ben going to show up to work. He ain't going to have his feet burnt up. He ain't going to have a blue mustache. He ain't going to have a plastic helmet with a little fake Steelers emblem on the side. So no matter what, Ben gonna show up to work.
Oh, man.
I agree with that.
Look, y'all don't look, Ben and Juju will have far better numbers than AB and Derek Carr.
That's a good point.
Y'all don't know. Hey, let me tell y'all something, man. Ben got a mean streak to him.
Yeah.
Ben's what, 6'4", 6'5"?
He big.
But what is Antonio Brown, about 5'10"?
Yeah.
Hey, boy, let me tell you something.
And?
If Ben catch AB alone with a couple of them offensive linemen, hey, man, you know how brothers like to change their conversation real quick?
Yeah.
When you get up on a big 6'5" white boy, all of a sudden your conversation gets going, hey, Ben, hey, we haven't played cribbage in a while. Ben, how's the kid? No, boy, keep talking that stuff when Ben pull up on you in that alley.
Hey, my
Full Metal Jacket, huh?
It's gone up. It's gone up for AB. I got to give him some job performance points. I got him at a minus one character, though. Mm. He's a 41, no longer a dumpster fire.
Mm. Wow. How'd he go up in job performance? He ain't played yet?
Well, he's out there practicing.
Oh, that's the job performance. Okay.
That's the only job now.
I love me some AB. You know that I'm on retainer for him, but I got to drop his job performance down. And I got him. Ooh.
Okay. Ooh, he's still a dumpster fire.
Y'all mad at AB right now.
All right.